Beispiel Burger. You had Trial and Error was written by whom? Not by Weitzman.
No, the third chapter by a certain Kinchi, but... Wasn't it... yes, you are right.
American Jewish author.
Yes, of course.
Came from Romania. What is his name? Samuel...
Maurice Samuel.
Maurice Samuel.
Yes, of course.
He's written a book on Venice.
Yes, that's true.
And he was furious with Malamud for writing a novel and something. He got it all wrong, etc. So I wrote a review with Kukizi, the Jewish Chronicle.
Fantastic.
Anyway, the point is this, that Pronitis Shmakov and the friends of the Jews, Maklakov, was a very famous lawyer, who afterwards became, I think he or his brother became the provisional government ambassador in Paris, in 1917. Then there were other people. Shigalovitov, Minister of Justice, was determined to prove Bailey's guilty. Notorious anti-Semite, whom the communists killed very, very early. Also, he got rid of very early. Vera Chibiryak, who was the woman, so to speak, who denounced him originally, who kept the brothel with our brother. She was somebody who the Bolsheviks shot at a fairly early stage. I don't think it was even a trial. All this gave pleasure to my family. That they didn't manage. That they did not manage.
So in this context, the names came back of the Bailey's trial. I mean,
yes, that,
in the
yes.
Bolshevik period.
The Bolshevik period, exactly.
I see.
They were talked about maybe before, too.
Yes,
I can't tell you when. But it was something which was engraved upon the imagination of every Russian Jew. Yeah, it was like Dreyfus.
Like Dreyfus, exactly.
For that purpose, like Dreyfus.
And the hero was Gutenberg.
The lawyer was Oscar Rosenberg, made splendid speeches,
yes.
But they were not, of course, admired him.
Yes.
That's not what did it. He was a Jewish lawyer that thought he was a hero,
yes.
Himself. He's a very vain figure.
I know.
Of course, Rosenberg occurred. But the man who really won the case for was Maklakov, who made one statement which proved somehow final, wonderful statement. He said, you know, if it had been true that a Jew had actually killed a Christian infant for whatever purpose, if that people knew that, if that had been seen, there wouldn't be a Jew alive in Kiev today. It can't have happened. It can't have happened. It's enough to say that. Ridiculous. Impossible. Out of question. If anyone really believed it, would we see. It wouldn't be true alive. What do you mean? It's obviously fabricated. This is the best statement made so the entire case is sort of elaborate proof. All the stories are always Jew with a black beard. We saw Jew with a black beard. That was always it. Poor Bailey's, he went to America. He went to Israel. He went to Palestine. He didn't do it all well. Went to America, died in total obscurity. Nothing happened about it. Anyway. That was something.
So
you asked about pogrom. That's why I'm telling
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
So that I knew. And that the way to see my Russia was clear.
And yet you didn't fear when you went by a church or when you saw a...
Nordtop.
That's very interesting,
Nordtop.
You know.
I knew people with Nordtop. I had no sense of something sinister. Priests, yes.
Yes.
I had an image of a priest. There's another sinister creature. But churches, you know. I mean, in Petersburg there was these splendid... There was St. Isaac's, who was a great cathedral, and Kazan Cathedral and so on. These are magnificent buildings, which I passed every day, which I admired and liked, and some of those went into. No. I didn't think Petersburg had a lot of overt antisemitism. That's the point.
That's the liberal tradition.
To some degree.
But let's come for a second back to the small town where you were before, Peter.
Hardly a town.
Yes, town. The village. Let's call it the village. It was a village with more or less a Jewish choir. Not the nobleman who was there in the manor house, but your parents were...
He wasn't a nobleman, he was just a landowner.
Yeah. But your parents were the rich people.
Certainly.
Who employed everybody.
Yeah. And the firm.
And the teacher had to treat you...
Special treatment,
and so on and so forth. Didn't this cause a little resentment among the Gentiles? I mean,
there were no Gentiles in our life.
There were no Gentiles in our life?
No. There were shopkeepers. You went in to buy a candle. In an ordinary shop, they sold you the candle. They did save the business. You see what I mean? They didn't feel this Jewish hierarchy at all. They were just people who sell things that people happen to need them. There was a policeman somewhere, but I never met him. There were these officers, I told you, who used to visit my mother in the evenings. They certainly didn't. What Gentiles could there have been?
And you said that the young...
And the peasants.
Young girls that would go to the forest.
That's right.
They were Jews and Christians together?
No, only Jews.
Only Jews.
Because all the officials, everybody who wasn't Jew. The daughters of shopkeepers were peasant girls. They didn't belong
to them. They wouldn't belong to
them. These are bourgeois. This is middle class. The Jews are a middle class nation, as you know. There were no proletarians. There were no peasants.
So there was no problem. Until you came to England,
I remember wonderful sites. I used to go to my grandparents rented rooms from a man who was a shopkeeper.
Yes.
And I remember some peasant woman coming in. She called Yitzka. Yitzka was sort of short for Yitzka of course. Yitzka the Black. Because he looked very black. Known as Yitzka the Black. He said, "You still here? I thought you were dead. I was told you were dead. Are you here?" Didn't gradually legalize. I thought you died in very normal words. That impressed me. I was amused by that, even then. I thought you died.
Yeah. Now,
can I have 2 pounds of something?
Now, before we come to Yitzchak Sade, another etymological question. When you find your father feeling toward the British, or Leonard Shapira's parents, you always said Anglomaniac. You didn't say Anglophile.
But my father.
And Leonard Shapira's father.
No, he wasn't at all. He wasn't Angloman.
So.
He was not there. He was simply
so, you married. Said, no. I mean, I think you said it about his great uncle, who was a member of the Duma.
He came to live in England before the war.
And you
before
said,
the First World War.
On one of them you said Anglomaniac. And your father too. Why don't you use a milder word, Anglophile?
Well, I could.
But
I only use it ironically.
Why? I mean,
I use it ironically.
Yeah, yes,
my father's determination to come and live in England and to live as the English lived, and his passion for the English in general, was beyond ordinary friendly feelings about England. Angloman in Russia was a word.
Yeah, I know.
And that simply meant somebody who was, as it were, directed towards England, who was conditioned by some sort of English feelings, pro-English feelings, of an unusually strong kind.
And you said it about another.
In the word people Angloman, Anglomaniacs was an ironical term for people who are on the whole conservative liberals, who believed in justice and peace. Broadly speaking, anti-revolution. Right-wing liberals, they were always, the people who admired England were not the left-wing, nor the monarchists, but the sort of intermediate class of bourgeois liberals of a respectable, mildly conservative sort.
My father?
No doubt.
From the age of 16,
no doubt. To this day. The English and the Dutch, they were two good nations, because they were philo-Semitic. There's no anti-Semitism in England, no anti-Semitism in Holland, every other country. Italy didn't exist, these people. But, I mean, the European countries they knew were all in some degree anti-Semitic. France, Dreyfus, Germany discriminated against them. Austria was in Austria-Hungary with your goat. Poland, highly anti-Semitic. Romania,
all right,
terrible.
I can see.
Scandinavia was all right, but that's outside the range. Although there were a lot of Scandinavians in Riga.
Yeah, I mean the contact between Riga and Stockholm, Riga, and then...
Quite close.
The Hanseatic and the Hanseatic...
More Scandinavian. Danes.
And I think that even the architecture is a little...
The architecture of Germans is the Hanseatic.
Hanseatic.
But there were contacts with Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. Merchants lived there, who traded across the Baltic. Visiting my family, we knew them.
We'll come to her later. But
let's come back to
Yitzhak Seder.
Right. His parents were quite rich. He was a very remarkable man. I met him, I think I told you, the first time I ever saw him was at his wedding in 1912.
In the Shire Musik.
That's when I saw him, married to my aunt. He was a art dealer. In Riga, yes, Hadil. He didn't want to go into crude business. He thought our dealing was the least soiling. And he had a particular taste for Romania of a certain kind. English, late 18th century, early 19th century painters. You see, yes. He liked Romney. He liked, who else? Sort of portraits, elegant portraits, early 90s century English portraits.
Joshua Reynolds?
Reynolds too, yes. And he used to supply us with albums of English painting. The other thing which he was a footballer, when there were not very many, and a wrestler. Number of footballers, national generally not great. Jews, I mean, unheard of. And he was a painter's model. Because he's physically well developed, and he used to sit as a nude model for Latvian painters. Which again, not a thing Jews did.
That was in Riga.
Riga.
After 1918.
No,
ah,
before.
In the early days.
1910.
1910.
1909. 1908. So the whole thing was very un-Jewish.
Yes.
And he was felt to be somewhat of. Still, he was Landeberg. He's called Isaac. And he was a cousin, and he was old, and he was quite alright, he was an art dealer. Not an art dealer, and also art books. Both sorts. Sometimes pictures, mostly perhaps prints, photographs, every sort. Then, next time I saw him, was in 1917, when he became a member of the Socialist Revolutionary Militia, which he joined, I'll tell you more about him.
There was another.
In 1914, joined the Russian army. Immediately. Bought back by his parents, which he could do. He immediately ran away and rejoined it. 17, he became a socialist revolutionary bishop, visited us in Petrograd, carrying an enormous Mauser pistol. My mother was so frightened, she took it from him, put in a bath of cold water, like a bomb, in case it went off. But he was now an armband. He was a hero of the revolution. Very exciting to meet him. And my parents were very pleased to see him. Relations were good.
It was between February and October.
About May, June, yes. You see, he was presumably under command of Rutenberg, who was the head of the group. I couldn't know it at the time. Then he joined the Red Guards in 18. After 17, immediately became Bolshevik. And joined the Red Guards, they were originally called, and Trotsky created. And then traveled about with his wife, he had a little daughter, who in the course of these travels, one army camp to another, died. Then he had the faintest feeling. Then
his wife, you mean?
He and his wife, they had a child.
Yes.
Child died.
The child died.
In 1919.
And he was indifferent.
Simply. They didn't see him in 19, this was reported. Then he the story of him is quite simple. He left the Reds and joined the Whites.
I know, you told me.
He joined the Whites and found himself on the shores of the Black Sea, which is where the Whites were being, I think there was a certain amount of white occupation of those towns, say Ferropolis, Odessa, in 1819, during the Civil War. One evening, that's his own story, he was sitting at a campfire and heard the officers talk, straight anti-Semitic talk. He decided not the place for him. So he got, he and his wife got on the next boat, which left the Black Sea port, and they didn't care where it went. Naturally, it went to Constantinople. From Constantinople, they went to Jaffa. The rest you know. In Jaffa, he became a stonebreaker. So little Bonnet. Alright. I next saw him in London in 1920.
The exhibition.
Four of the Wembley exhibition. Where he came with a pavilion. With the Palestine Pavilion, Jewish section. From Sir little Bonnet. Alright. Leave me at that point.
No.
The rest I...
No. Did you ever ask him why did he join the White Army?
Because he thought the Reds were too... He joined the White Army because he was certainly upset by the Reds. He thought they were brutal, and he didn't like the discipline too much. But he thought they were terrible people. He thought communists were terrible people until 1948.
Or maybe 40, the war. The war is 40.
He never liked communism at all. He was pure adventurer. And he simply said to me what I repeated to you. The position is simple, he said. Russians may throw bombs on us. The Americans never will. So we have to make friends with the Russians. It's all it came.
And that was the doctrine of Smain. I mean, he was...
That's the came of Smain.
Now...
I met Smain in his house.
Smain
said there's no doubt about it. Immigration in Palestine will come from South Africa and Argentina. There's bound to be anti-Semitism there. They will come in thousands.
But on the other hand, he became a communist out of Jewish motives. He was sure, I mean, Smain. The Russian will occupy
the Middle East. We must come to terms with it. They had no political
agreement. Yeah, and as he didn't have nuances, either it is
or
but, I mean, in your family, in fact, there was an anathema. I mean,
no. Gonyovsky left his first wife.
But when he left her, I mean, he was...
That was in the 20s.
In the 20s, yes.
Late 20s.
Yes.
She went back to Moscow.
He went back to Moscow.
And I saw her there in 45.
She met her because she left because he left. She went to Moscow because he left.
Obviously.
Yes.
He treated her badly, I'm sure.
Yes, so.
She was hideously ugly. She was a graduate of two universities. She was blue stocking, first order. She was a socialist. And she was prepared two PhDs, anything you like. Frightfully ugly and worshipped him. His father, her first cousin.
And they had only one child who died.
That's right.
And you saw her in 45?
In Moscow, yes.
Really?
Certainly.
What position did she have?
None, I don't know. She lived in a room with her two brothers in the extreme squalor. And half blind. And the very sad state. I think she had a little government job. Some was with clerks in some office. But she lived out her life in very... Very sadly. My mother's sister was in a much better position. She married the grandson of the patriarch.
You told me.
But this is my father's sister. She was a sad, ugly, rather depressed woman.
So she didn't even ask you about Israel, Zionism, nothing.
Too dangerous to her. Took no interest. It was an episode in her life. He pretended he was Zionist. But I don't know that he was pretty.
Who?
Yitzhak.
Ah, yes. Now, you once said something that I really remember, that he might have ended in as a general in Uruguay or Mexico, or I mean...
He made patriotic speeches to my family in 25 about our land. He taught me the song, various then patriotic songs. You see, I already learned Zionist songs in 17 in Pittsburgh, in Petrograd. I learned things like Shamaya Arazim in German, Dort wo die Zedern. I learned Hatik for certain, probably other things as well. Shamshualim Yesh, Maginat Shili.
Now,
that's 17.
And the lyric of Shamshualim Yesh is also German?
No. That's an Israeli Palestinian song.
Well, but it can't be Palestinian. I mean, it is
the
influenced
music
by
is not
something.
German. Not German.
Not German, nor Russian.
Russian might have been.
Because you see, the composers usually...
And no, it wasn't Russian. Neither Russian. It was Jewish. It had a kind of...
It could be Jewish.
Wallachian, Romanian, that kind of thing.
Moldavic,
you are quite right. Much more like Hasidic songs. Shamshualim Yesh Baginat Shvi. That is song of the Shomrim.
And Suut Yona Mesva Degel.
No, that is not.
No. That's the song
sort of, thing.
Of the Biluim.
Biluim, I know.
Yes. And then you said, what kind of songs have they taught you in 25?
It's Eight Israel, Maybe Try.
very nice.
There's a psalm, which I already learned at school, in Latin, because it is a Mendelssohn version of it.
Sure.
De Exitu Israel, De Egypto.
Yeah.
Domus Jacob, De something or other. Jordanus, Reversus Est, Retrosum. Remember?
I always remember when you went to you once went to a seder, I think in Gemosar.
With Yelag Yigal, yes.
And you came back and told me, they don't realize that all their songs come from Mendelssohn or from
German. But that was no. I remember that wasn't there.
The canon.
No, that was not Mendelssohn. The song he taught me about was by this time already a Palestinian Jewish song. Yes, we see.
You know that one of the best composers we had, we had three or four excellent composers in the Mandic period, that really raised the level of the popular, and the popular song to an extent that until now, it's the best kind of art we had.
Quite.
One of those four or five was Samborski's brother.
Called Samborski?
Yes, Daniel Samborski.
Composer.
He came from Berlin, and for two or three decades was a conductor of choirs and teaching popular music all over the country, paid by the Histadrut, and some so beautiful popular music.
Still played,
still sung, very, very Zionist, very patriotic, but
beautifully done.
Still beautifully done. And there are some three other four. In this respect, I think we achieved in art more than in any other field.
Really?
Yes. To this day, the popular song, the chanson, in Israel, is always the very
dates
high
back to Mendy.
And
back
starts
to
that.
Let's know it. Another Yitzhak Sade song, of course, was a horror, which I'd never heard before.
Yes.
You know, it was also taught.
Yeah.
He presented him two books. He lived with us. At that time, it's related to my aunt. In Kensington, where we lived. Every morning he went off to Wembley. The evenings I did with him. Theater cinemas, our relationship was very good then. And he then gave me the tell me the story about how I went to jail during the Jabotinsky riots.
Yes.
And how rude he was to Lady Samuel. She came to inspect the prison. Eichenberger's wife, and his sentence was doubled as a result. Very pleased with it. But he had no feeling for Jabotinsky.
No.
Himself, nothing at all. He wasn't a friend, didn't know him, and so on.
No, I mean,
I don't know whom he knew in those days.
he was then, I mean, he was then a central figure in what was called Gdud HaAvoda, the labor legion.
Labor
which
legion.
Was very, very interesting, in a way unique social...
Who were the leaders of that?
Now, he was one of the leaders,
yes.
But Dolekhovich was a leader.
Indeed, I see.
And the two main leaders, in a way,
yes.
were Dolekhovich and somebody called Mendel Elkin, that in 1929, with a group of splinters, went back to Russia.
Really?
And this is the trauma we have in Israeli history, of labor history, several traumas. Arlozorov. The trauma is Elkin's departure.
And he disappeared.
He disappeared. His wife was found. Now, they established a small colony in the south. And then, of course, during the 30s, they were persecuted. We found what happened to him only lately. He was sent to a gulag, and his wife was still alive a few years ago, and somebody spoke to her and learned all about it.
Facts, yes.
And this trauma created this kind of conditioned reflex against any communist.
Let me tell you, I had a friend called Rachmilevich who I talked to you about. He went to Palestine in 1947, when I saw him there then, I think, maybe 51. He was ill and he was lost. And next to him was some member of the Shlimapam at that period. And they began to talk about politics. And he made some pejorative reflection about Stalin. And the man said, please don't say that. It caused him pain.
Rachmilevich said it?
No, the man said it to Rachmilevich.
Really?
Rachmilevich is a Menshevik.
Yeah.
All his life. He was a typical Russian Jewish social democrat. But Stalin, of course, was a... And he made some nasty, hostile remark about Stalin. Meant, please stop. Stop talking. It gives it. This is 47, 48.
Yes, but that could be somebody who was...
Like the man in Prague.
Pardon?
Like the man who went to Prague with the rest.
Oren. Yes. Now, that in 47, A, don't forget, A, somebody could be a sheer communist. If you are a communist, you are
a communist. Yes.
But the point was within the Labour Party, the danger of...
It was an extreme left wing, yes.
And secondly, after the Second World War, the heroism of Stalingrad on the one hand, and Jews who were saved by the Russians on the other hand.
No, quite so.
And Gromyko in April 47, that could happen.
Yes, yes.
But...
I came in 47 to Palestine, before Gromyko. All this was still Weizmann, before the meeting was all that. And I remember traveling in a boat, this little boat from Marseille to Haifa. I can't remember who I talked to. First of all, I talked to Lizinski from Kfar Lizinski.
Really?
He was in that boat.
Oh, I'll tell you about the family alone.
Oh, he was in the boat. Oh, and just an ordinary.
Very rich.
Balabos.
Yeah.
Yes, but of no great interest.
Yeah.
Then I talked to, what's his name? That's where I made friends with him. Tabenkin was also in that boat.
You met Tabenkin then?
Certainly. Then in afterwards.
I see.
Then you Tabenkin. I knew him. And then there was a man with Tabenkin, I can't remember his name, also some kind of Zionist official.
Yeah, it was probably spring 46. I mean, Tabenkin...
Summer 47.
Summer 47, yes. Tabenkin went to see the camps of the DPs and then went back.
We are now in something like August 47, I mean, July 47.
Now, if you speak before Gromyko's speech, or if you speak...
Gromyko's speech?
It was
October,
April.
November, what?
No, the speech of Gromyko was in April.
Nothing, I knew nothing about that.
So you
when
mean,
was the speech?
In
New York?
Yes, in Leipzig. The special... There was a special session of the United Nations.
On this subject?
On this subject only.
Before the vote?
Before that, I mean, it was there that they established the United Nations Special Committee.
I see, well, it's public.
So, then,
well,
then
so came to Palestine, all this, yes. I think Rebecca already made a pro-Palestine speech.
Yes,
and I don't think I was anyhow. All I can tell you is that this other man, in my country, was also certainly an official.
Yes.
An official. So I was talking to communists. You know, there are communists, or honest communists in the world. You didn't think. People don't deny it, he says.
Yes.
There are some very decent people
mm-hmm.
among communists, which I suddenly saw where this was going.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the date.
Yeah.
The Blinken didn't quite say that.
Yeah. But he didn't prevent it. I mean,
I'm sure he didn't.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't. We stopped in Lebanon, I remember. I was allowed to come down because my passport said I was a British official. The Blinken was not. No, nor my father. Nor my father. You see? Beirut. Not allowed to come down. Jews, no.
Yeah. You know why? It's the boycott of the Arab League. I think people are coming to take me.
What, 6 o'clock, yes. Or if you're in very lucky. But all I can tell you, the immigration officials wouldn't let them land. And, hi, Lebanon. Lebanon, said the Beirut. Hi. Lebanon. Lavarnora, Lebanon. Ay, ay, ay. Really all this went on.
Now, did you speak with Yitzhak Sadeh the English?
No, Russian.
Russian.
Certainly.
Now, did he speak with you about literature?
No. It wasn't the least interesting.
He tried he to pretend. Show off.
He may pretend.
That's what I intend to say. I mean, his disciples
in
Israel.
One has to be intellectual.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think that's put on. My aunt, his wife, could have talked about it the first time. He may have caught something from her, but he was not interested in books.
Yeah, but it's interesting
then
that he was
asking. I saw him in 47, when there was a price on his head.
Yes.
And I was staying in the Weizmann. I went to Tel Aviv, and I went to a cafe. I don't know how I traced him. I think I must have met somebody.
Somebody took you, probably.
Probably.
I'm sure.
Yes, somebody must have.
I mean, I can tell you whom. I'm sure that it was the bodyguard of Yitzhak Sadeh. Yitzhak Sadeh had, when Weizmann was in Israel, he always had somebody in charge of his security.
Well, Yitzhak Sadeh was for a time.
For a time was
Yitzhak Sadeh. He liked Weizmann, liked him very
exactly.
much. Ben Gurion hated him.
I know.
When
the
Weizmann was
calling
Rabbi Yitzchok.
Yes, there was there is special
Weizmann.
Relations.
He loved Weizmann.
I know.
Loved him.
I know.
That's all true. But when I went to see him at this cafe,
yes.
at the back somewhere,
yes.
secretly, he was very jolly, he was extremely good mood. He was 47. Why am I telling you this? Because that was the first time I saw him, and then my family would refuse to let me go and see him. That I ignored. My father was there and refused to meet him. But I did not. And then I saw him again in his house in Jaffa.
Yes, that's when he was ill?
When not yet.
Not yet.
He was full of trophies
yeah, yes.
of the war, and he gave me very vivid descriptions of capturing Ferrari watches. And I tell you, he was Garibaldi. And he liked that very much. He signed his last letter to me, Garibaldi. And that's when I met Snake in his house. It wasn't until then. That's when he used to go and see the Soviet ambassador.
That was 49, I think.
It was 40.
It can't be earlier.
He wasn't earlier, no. The one he was later.
Ah, later, all right, but not earlier.
50-51.
50-51, yeah.
More like when did he die? 52-3. Many months.
Or maybe 53.
That's what we did. About 2 years before.
Yeah.
I saw the last wife. She was a sort of sniperette.
Yeah.
Lady with some militarized lady.
She was a good photographer.
Mm.
She was a Yekke.
She had no idea.
From Gibbard Brenner. She died.
Also of cancer.
Yes.
I saw, of course, I saw his name, Yoram. Very nice.
It was my initiative.
It was.
When you were invited to Itzhak Navon,
correct.
He asked me whom correct. To invite. Correct. I told him, Sholem is all right. Invite your after.
Oh, yes,
it was a very good idea.
Very.
For them it was a real experience.
Very nice meet you. I have not seen him since. I always meant to. I think I have an address somewhere.
He lives in the same house.
In
Jaffa.
Jaffa.
And he makes his living from translation. He translates for Amoved.
Well, I really must. I'm going for 3-4 days at the end of January. Beginning from the Buddhist Rothschild. I'm in 10 years. You see, I need somebody else. I need a lawyer. Herbert Hart won't go.
Herbert
that's
will
clear.
Not go.
That's clear. He's going to have an operation again. I think prostate or something. So, Ronnie Dworkin is in New York and I can't...
So why do you need a lawyer? I mean, there are not many lawyer candidates.
Well, there are some. Well, if not a lawyer, then a historian of some sort from here.
Or a philosopher. Ah, well, you are the philosopher.
No, philosopher's no good.
No good, yes.
There are only the 2 people from England. The rest are all Israelis.
Yes.
Who can I get? I asked Pulitzer, he can't come. He would have done very well. Now I'm just going to the new...
So you have to find somebody. Will it be in January this time, not March? I see. Well. Yeah. Yes, beginning of March is as usual. Now who could...
I think I'm going to go on 6.